Hello, I'm Casey Kasem. Welcome to another edition of America's Top 40. No, I'm not dead yet. But tonight I want to give a special shout-out to our friend Eric Martin. Happy birthday, Eric. This is a long-distance dedication. A long-distance dedication from the year 1988. This is the National Wrestling Alliance's third annual Bunkhouse Stampede, a Jim Crockett Promotion Productions, and our present to you. So, Eric, if you're listening, happy birthday. I'm Casey Kasem. I am almost dead. And before I forget, because I'm really demented, you're listening to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast on Rant EM Radio and the Shining Wizards Network.
Very special indeed, Jim. You're right there. Here he is. Of course, the United States champion, a legend, a dream, Dusty Rhodes. Dusty, all across the world from your many millions of fans, I heard a great sigh go up from them when we found out what your plans really were going to be for 1988.
Well, like I said, Bobby, you know, 1988 is going to be a big year for Dusty Rhodes. I've made my commitment to the wrestling fans throughout this country to defend this United States title against all comers. I've made a commitment to Nikita Koloff, my super partner, to stand in there with him on any occasion throughout this country and be the best at what we can be, because we were doing it before it was fashionable. Now then, it comes to mind, the Midnight Express with Jim Cornette in 1988 has taken hold of Bobby Eaton, beautiful Bobby Eaton, Stan Lane, to challenge Dusty Rhodes for the United States heavyweight title. I'm fine with that, baby. That said well on me. That said well on me, Bobby Eaton, Stan Lane, Jim Cornette, and Big Blubber. Now I turn my attention to one Laz Zabisco. Let me tell you something, Laz Zabisco. You running around with something that I already had. You running around with something that I already had, I say again. And if I said it for the third time, that's a hat trick. She knows about Dusty Rhodes. Inside, outside, backwards, everything about Dusty Rhodes. Bear Windham, you in a big contest right now for that Western States title, but you throw Dusty Rhodes' name in there and say, I want to be the one to make it retire. I'm not ready to retire. I'm not ready to sit down. I'm ready for Freddie Jack, and Freddie's ready for me. Larry Zbysko, baby doll, think about one thing. Think about the American dream ending your career. Bobby Eaton, think about the American dream ending your career. Stan Lane, think about the American dream ending your career. While you're thinking about it, Dusty Rhodes, Super Party Nikita Koloff, get up for 1988, baby.
All right, fans, we'll be back. We'll have more action.
Dusty Rhodes.
U.S. heavyweight champion, the American dream, Dusty Rhodes. Dusty, good to see you.
Well, Tony, you know, 1988, I said I dedicated this United States heavyweight title to the people. Nikita Koloff, the super partner, just a few minutes from now, we're going to get a chance to really get funky like a monkey with Tony Blanchard and Arn Anderson. Nassau Coliseum, I had to fight, scratch, claw my way into this finals. Dr. Death won a lot of money. Adam won a lot of money. Bubba won a lot of money. Wild card time for Dusty Rhodes, the American dream. But a few years ago, that was a 96 team called the Oakland Raiders at the time that won the Super Bowl. The only team to be a wild card, if you will. Turn my attention now to the U.S. title. Larry Zbysko, Bobby Eaton, Larry Zbysko come out here talking about want me to lay down, give me my belt. You're talking to the wrong guy. You ain't talking to Mr. Windham. You ain't talking to Bob Collins. You ain't talking to Mr. Crockett. You're talking to Dusty Rhodes, the American dream. Two-time, three-time world heavyweight champion, now U.S. champion. Baby doll, you get on here talking about I haven't had you. Darling, I said it earlier. One time was all right. Two times was all right. Three times was a hat trick. So what is it? On the other time, it's called soul play. You know what I mean, darling?
The one and only Dusty Rhodes. Let's go back to the ring, fans.
Total package, Lex Luger.
You know, Tony Schiavone, I like to say right off the top that Starrcade 87 was everything that it was billed to be. It was the first of many to come for the total package Lex Luger, but the level of intensity, the level of competition is something that I've never seen before, and I've been involved in professional football playoff games, and it was there. The air was like electricity. I have never felt or seen anything like it before, and it was a pleasure to be involved. And you know, when I got in that ring, and Dusty Rhodes and I, we locked eyes. We both knew that the past, the present, and the future of professional wrestling was right there in that ring. Because you see, Dusty Rhodes, my hat's off to you. You wrestled a hell of a match. You showed me that you are what they say you are. But you see, Dusty Rhodes, so is the total package Lex Luger, because there's only a few superstars in our sport. You can count them on one hand. There's that special few that rise head and shoulders above the rest. You're one, Ric Flair's another, but you see, so is a total package Lex Luger. Because when I walk through an airport, people stop what they're doing. When I walk down that aisle in filled arenas, when I take off that robe, people know that they're looking at a special athlete, something only comes along once in a decade or two. Because you see, in that arena that night, in Starrcade 87, when we looked into each other's eyes, I knew Dusty Rhodes that the game plan set forth was all wrong.
Excuse me. I don't think I understood you right. Shivani, this interview is over. Luger, you and I need to talk.
James, we've been personal friends for a long time. We're business associates, but this interview is over when I say it's over. What I'm saying is from now on, you're welcome to accompany me to the ring at any time. But the bottom line is, I will win and lose matches from now on my own merits as an athlete and as a competitor. There will be no more outside interference.
What's going on?
Let me first say, David, that I've been listening to your comments out here. And I've been listening to you talk about what you perceive to be a tension in the air these last couple weeks. And indeed, there has been a tremendous amount of tension surrounding the Four Horsemen. In fact, it got so thick at times that you couldn't cut it with a serrated knife. And it all goes back to Thanksgiving night. It was a night that the Four Horsemen had a chance for a clean sweep, to take back the World Heavyweight Championship, to hold on to the World Tag Team titles, and to destroy a legend. And we had a game plan that one athlete took to the ring every time the Horseman gave it to him, that compiled victory after victory after victory. We have an athlete that took that same game plan and went in the ring and took the United States title. The game plan was fine when it worked for him. But you see, the minute that his shortcomings ended in a result that was not to his liking, suddenly he looked around at everybody else and started to question the game plan. Now, the legendary Vince McMahon Lombardi, when he walked into the locker room and passed out the game plan to his players, if somebody took the playbook and said, "Coach, I don't think this is going to work," and gave it back, "I'll think of a game plan of my own," he was off the team, gone at that moment. Well, we tolerated the situation where this same individual suddenly insulted me by questioning the game plan. And there was this huge crevice that was widening every day, and my mind was preoccupied about how to solve this dilemma. Well, as everybody knows, December is Bunkhouse Stampede Month. And I got into a bunkhouse stampede because I wanted to be right in there to hold my boys together. And the situation developed when all the smoke settled and everybody turned nose to nose. There was nobody left in the ring but the Four Horsemen. And the referee jumped up on the apron and said, "Hey, keep this thing going." And I said, "No, it stops right here. The Horsemen will divide the money." And then the referee informed me, "Hey, the record book has got to be a winner." Well, it was at that moment that something that I never even remotely dreamed of passed in front of my mind. The chance for James J. Dillon to put his name in the record book alongside Dusty Rhodes and Big Bubba Rogers and a select few as winners of a bunkhouse stampede. A dream I never thought I'd realize. Arn Anderson right there by my side. High five, sacrificed himself over the top rope. Tully Blanchard sacrificed himself, high five and gone. And that's when it got real, real interesting. And I want to reflect back right now and take a look at this tape. And I think you'll see the pieces all come together.
The Mighty River.
Thank you. are you telling me? Are you right or here? I don't think you're over. I guess if that's the case, I'm telling you. This is the decision. I'm my own man. I'll make the right decision.
David Crockett, Thanksgiving night, I'm the one that said I had the perfect athlete and the perfect plan. It was not the plan that was not perfect, and we now know it was the so-called athlete that was very far from being perfect.
David Crockett, I know time on this case station is very expensive, but I want to spend some of it. 1 year ago, J.J. Dillon came to me, came to Flair, came to Tully. He said, there's a guy down in the Everglades of Florida with a fantastic body and willing to learn, a diamond in the rough. So what we did was we sacrificed our time, our body, to train Luger in the aspects of being a horseman. He came along real well. Well, Luger, for you to stand to the forefront, correct James J. Dillon verbally, then put your hands on him physically. You put yourself in no man's land, fella. What's happened? The Four Horsemen were here long before you came here. They're going to be here long after you leave. Now, you're the perfect physical specimen. You're the total package. But what you are alone is just another man. With the Horsemen, you rose to greatness, better than you could ever be by yourself. But the bottom line is, my friend, you want to find out how good you are, you're looking at the measuring stick. We're not going to draw straws to see who gets on you, Luger. You want to be the total package. You're no longer a horseman. I'm going to look you eye to eye. We're going to find out. Don't cry about the game plan. The problem was the execution. The game plan was fine. You're not the athlete to pull it off like you think you are. You were coached by the greatest of them all, James J. Dillon. You were trained by the greatest of them all, Dolly Blanchard, myself, Ric Flair. Any shortcomings you had on your own. Now you want to find out if you're the total package. You want a full grip on what the Four Horsemen are all about. You're looking at the measuring stick. I'm coming for you, Luger. Don't be looking for me.
That's it,
baby.
Yeah.
All right, we'll be back with more action right after these messages. It's Luger.
You know, David, there's been a lot of talk out here from the Four Horsemen about what's been given to Lex Luger in the past year, about what they've given to me. I always give credit where credit is due. I learned a lot from that group of wrestlers in the past year. I'm a good student. They are a tremendous group of athletes.
I never would have considered to be a part of them if they didn't have something that I wanted. Arn Anderson is one of the most intense individuals I've ever been around. From him, you learn intensity. Tully Blanchard is a fine technical wrestler. From Tully Blanchard, you learn how to wrestle. And from Ric Flair, you learn what being a champion is all about. He teaches you how to carry yourself as a champion. But you see, it wasn't a one-way street. I gave back all that I could give. You see, Arn Anderson, many times we were out. You had a few too many. I carried you home. You've carried me home. You talk about Ric Flair. How I've trained with them. How I've eaten at his house. That's all true. But you see, when Ric Flair lost his belt to Ronnie Garvin, that whole month leading up to Starrcade, Arn Anderson, while you were lying in bed till 12 noon, when we got in a red-eye flight at 3 in the morning, I got in my car and I drove over to his house and got him out of bed and said, Nate, we need to go down to the gym and train. There's so many times when you give it all, your mind, body, and soul, sometimes there's nothing left to give. There's so many times when James Dane Dillon came running up to me with dollar signs in his eyes, Arn Anderson, and said, Lou, there's a part in the movie, we can't pass it up. There's an advertising agency over here that wants you, Lex Luger. James, I said this. I said that, James, there comes a time to wrestle and there comes a time for things later on. I said, does it involve the rest of the group? And they said no. So I said, James, I'm here to wrestle with the other people as a group. There's many times when I come up for an autograph at the table, Arn Anderson, and they say, Lex, I want your autograph. But I'd automatically slide it across the table for you to sign. I didn't want your feelings to be hurt. You're right about one thing. I have no allies in the sport of professional wrestling, but I do have a lot of God-given ability as an athlete. I have a burning desire to be the best that this sport has ever seen. Now, Arn Anderson, you stepped out front like you always do and said you're going to take care of the tunnel package, Lex Luger. That's all well and good. But Arn Anderson, I'm not waiting around for you to tap me on the shoulder, because I'm going to be there whatever arena it takes. I'm going to be there looking you in the eye. I'm going to be there at a level of intensity, Mr. Intensity, that you have never seen before. I can stand out like other wrestlers and say all the things that I want to do, Anderson. Those emotions are there. But the bottom line is this. We're going to meet Arn Anderson, and the level of intensity is going to go off the scale. Because I've got a direction and a purpose in my career. And you will not and you cannot stand in my way. Remember that.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's go to the ring.
Something else, pal. You're all muscled up. Hell of a paint job. You're the new model, right? You're the man that wants to replace this. You gotta be kidding me. I'm smooth. And pal, ask around. I'm the dirtiest player in the game. I break rules, and instant, I stop at nothing to win. Are you willing to pay the price?
Rick, what about Road Warrior Hawk, the announcement out here from Mr. Jim Crockett of the Nassau Coliseum?
That's it! Pay-per-view, the Nassau Coliseum! Road Warrior Hawk! Ah, the man that everybody trembles when they hear his name. 6'3", 270 pounds, 21-inch arms, 550 bench press. But Hawk, in my eyes, pal, you're a man without a country. And you know what makes you a man without a country? Something like this. So at the Nassau Coliseum, bring all that big money. Bring it out, pal. Jump on the nature boy. I dare ya. Woo!
Let's go back to the ring.
Yeah. hello and goodbye. You don't have to say anything. The Road Warriors are here. Hawk and Animal. Hawk going after the world title on January 24th at the Nassau Coliseum against Ric Flair. Animal in the bunkhouse stampede.
Sports writers and sports editors flapping their yaps about us getting soft? Does this look soft to you, Paul? Does this look soft to you? Well, I'll tell you what. There's one part of our bodies that's soft, and it ain't soft all the time, if you catch my meaning. Ric Flair! New York City Ric Flair! You're gonna find out what hard is all about, because from the time I get in the ring with you, Guppy, it's gonna be a hard night, all night long, and you can forget about your limousines, your pretty girls, and your diamond rings, because they don't mean diddly do squat when I get done with you. When I get done with you, Space Mountain will be closed for repairs. Tell them, Paul.
You know, Tony Schiavone, I've heard Paul Jones talk, and it appears to me he has a monomaniacal obsession with the Legion of Doom. Well, there's two places I know you'll be able to find us. One is January 20th in Hawaii, and the next day is January 21st in L.A. So if you're feeling froggy, Paul Jones, just jump in. You and your men are going to be in Hawaii, and L.A. will be looking for you.
Yeah, we snack on danger, and we dine on death.
Yeah. And we'll be right back.
You know, the Legion of Doom has never back on from any challenge. And the month of January looms awesome in front of the Legion of Doom. Now, Paul Jones, we've settled on a place, we've settled on a time, and we're going to meet your men in your weightlifting event. Just make sure you bring all your money. Animal. Tony Schiavone, all of New York and all the wrestling world, the final of the Bunkhouse Stampede, and I mean it. You people out there know, no matter what my brother or myself set our minds on, we want to do something, we get it done, and we go all the way with it. Ric Flair, you're real good with stats. You do your studying. You're a good champ. But you ain't prepared for this. I guarantee it. Tell them all. You know, Animal, I've always said there are two kinds of people in our books. Neil Mexi, Zoom Dweebies, and clam heads, and king of clam heads is Ric Flair. There's a lot of differences between Ric Flair and me. Yeah. The physical ones are very obvious. Yeah. Ric Flair pulls up in a limousine, I hop out of a yellow cab. Ric Flair goes on his private jet, I'm in the commercial airlines. Ric Flair's got a nice suit on, and I don't own one. You know why? Because suits, limousines, pretty girls, and all that fine jewelry, it don't win in the ring, and it don't mean squat to me. I'll tell you what means something to me. That strap around your waist, and the Neo Maxi Zoom Dweebies out there who know I'm talking about want to see it around my waist or his waist, and we're going to do it. And you're not going to like it, but we're going to a lot.
Sunday. Puddinhead, how can you actually say that you have the strongest team in wrestling? Look at these guys.
No, something is crooked. I have something to ask you, Paul Jones. You got some sort of problem. You got two problems you want us to take care of. We proved everybody all over this world for 5 years now that the Hawk and the Animal were the two strongest guys in professional wrestling, and also the two best fighters. There ain't nobody in the wrestling sport that's stronger than us. And I got one other thing to clear up there, Crockett. Everybody and anybody out there, one thing for certain about Hawk and myself and our six-man partner, Dusty Rhodes, we still don't care
anytime, anywhere, we'll defend our belts. Tell them, Hawk.
Well, David Crockett, it seems like X-Lax Luger has finally gotten totally constipated by the Four Horsemen. And the Four Horsemen seem to be riding to the edge of apocalypse now. Well, within every bad bunch of apples, there's the one that's worse than the others. And he just showed himself to be worse than the others. Now, Bunkhouse Stampede's our kind of match. What we grew up with, fighting bunches of people and walking out the winner. We'll be deviating septums, ripping out goozles, and knocking tartar off the teeth of every person who's stupid enough to not just jump over the top rope and get rid of the inevitable. The inevitable being me and Animal sitting in the bunkhouse stampedes, jumping over the top rope together and collecting the money. Then we give it to Paul. He takes it to the bank. Lord knows how much we got. Don't make no difference to us, because what makes the difference to us is beating people up and being the best. The Legion of Doom, like it or leave it.
David Crockett, I think we've summarized it all. Paul Jones, I think you're opening up a can of worms that you really ought to think about. The Bunkhouse Stampedes, how can these two men not be the favorites, the strongest men in professional wrestling? And when they set their mind on a goal, and their goal is the Bunkhouse Stampedes, there's nothing that can stop them. The Animal, the Hawk, the Legion of Doom, number one now, number one forever.
We snack on danger and we dine on death.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you know they can wear that armor in the Bunkhouse Stampede. We'll be back with more action right after this.
The good, the bad, and the downright ugly. Live Sunday, January 24th, the showdown's in New York. The third annual Bunkhouse Stampede Final with more than 20 of the top NWA wrestlers. Only the roughest, only the toughest will be left standing at the end. And the payoff, $500,000. For a bootful of dollars, these cowboys will do anything.
Anything goes, don't miss it.
See us do what we do best. Double team, triple team.
The finals of the Bunkhouse Stampede, the baddest of the bad.
This is Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, and I'm here to tell you there ain't nothing as bad as the Bunkhouse Stampede. And there's only one way that you can get the Bunkhouse Stampede, so I want you to listen up there, Pilby.
For more information on how to order the Bunkhouse Stampede Championships in your own home on January 24th, call your local cable company.
The opinions you love, the history you crave. This is Rant FM Radio.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, the Impact Playa, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
Once in every lifetime.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages, your new recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting, from the current to the way back, we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Roy, and I am joined by
the Mega Powers.
What's up there, handsome Dave?
Doing good, man. You know,
Just holding it down. Rest in peace to Rick Mayall, the Young Ones fame, or for us Americans, Drop Dead Fred.
Yeah.
Movie.
Drop Dead Fred. 57 years old. Sad, man. But
he literally dropped dead.
Yeah, literally Drop Dead Fred. We are live on the Rant, rantemradio.com. We are a Shining Wizards Network production. If you caught the beginning of the pre-show, Casey Kasem made an appearance and paid a birthday homage to our buddy Eric. Happy birthday, Eric.
Happy birthday, Mr. Martin.
Mr. Martin. Also, Kevin Garifo, Shining Wizards Kevin. His birthday is tomorrow. So happy birthday to him. And the chat room is live. Who's in? Oh, Harry's in the chat room.
Yeah, he's up.
Fucking 2 o'clock in the morning over there.
4 a.m. or something over there.
Oh, I see Scott. Scott's in there. Hello, Scott. I think I saw Axel in there, too, a little while ago.
Ajax? I don't know who that guy is, but he's in there.
Yeah. All right. So, you had a good week? Everything's good to go?
Oh, yeah. I had an action-packed week. What went down?
Yeah, you want to recap that now? You want to get into
that
first?
Yeah, let me recap it now while it's still fresh.
All right. So, Saturday morning, I joined the Mega Powers along with the Shining Wizards, as we normally been doing for the last couple of the Legends of the Ring in beautiful Monroe, New Jersey.
Well, it was actually Jamestown, Jamesburg.
Whatever.
In Monroe.
Well, the
Township.
Crown. Well, when you look at a map and you map quest it and you Google Maps it, because I was going to call you on it, but I was like, you know what? Doesn't matter. I can give a fuck, actually. It said,
when I put in my GPS, it said Jamesburg, and I'm like, is this right? And I kept putting it back in, and it kept giving me Jamesburg.
Well, because your GPS is probably biased because you're from New Jersey. That's what I figured. I kind of figured that. So it's all right, dude. It's okay. So anyway, Legends.
All's love and fair in directions.
Exactly.
And all that.
So I got to join them for a couple hours before I started my weekend family trip down south. And to be honest, you know, this is like my second or third one. I don't do any of these things, man. When I was a kid, I was too poor. So doing something like this is pretty cool, and of course, it's always fun with the Shining Wizards. Kevin was with us this time, and Eddie was with us. Matt was not. Shout out to Matt, by the way, working hard, probably.
Flipping those pizzas.
Yeah, man, don't knock his hustle. But,
hey, man, flipping pizzas is what, you know, makes this world go round.
Yeah, and it makes him a
shit. We all love pizza, so we need somebody to flip them, cook them, throw the pepperoni, whatever, and it's damn good pizza.
Either way, Matt was missed. We got to share a table with the WWE Hall of Famer herself, Miss Tammy Sitch, you know better as Sonny, and our buddy, the former ECW World Heavyweight Champion, the hardcore icon himself, Mr. Justin Credible of the Pro Wrestling 101 on the Shining Wizards Network exclusively.
And I must say, you know, as much as I love both of them, they both were packing some weight with them.
Well, you know what? It's around that time. They're all about my age, and what happened is, you know, life happens, and they're not in the gym every day, and they're not active on the road anymore. Time catches up with you. I must say, though, Sonny was very, very, very busty in her appearance.
She's trying to get those breasts out there.
Yeah, she had a bit of a cold. She was very late. Got to schmooze with her for a few minutes. Justin was mad cool. Always good to us. Always a good time. The plan was Mick Foley sat across from us, and he actually did a show with Kevin, as we spoke about last week, and Dave was there. Dave spoke about
I was
that.
There with Big Papa Powers. We had an awesome time there, and, you know, Kevin got called out on stage by Mr. Foley.
That's pretty funny.
Telling a rape joke.
So as Kevin's telling us the story, as the story unfolds, come to find out, Mick Foley's not only making an appearance at Legends of the Ring, but
he's right across from us.
He's right across from us.
Direct, like right in front of us. We're staring each other down.
So the night before, I get a call.
A few feet away.
Right. So the night before, I get a call from Shining Woods' Tony. Listen, if you could stop, we can't stop. We're going to be early. Can you get him a cake? I was like, okay. I figured I'm coming in on 95. Maybe I'll hit like a Wawa or a fucking Quick Check or whatever the hell it is. And he likes pumpkin pie. It is fucking June. I don't know if I'm getting him a pumpkin pie.
No.
But I go in, I'm like, maybe they can get him like a little birthday cake, because a lot of these places have bakeries. I couldn't, so I got him an Entenmann's cake.
Yeah.
Sadly, I couldn't stay. I had to leave and start my trip, but Mega Power stayed behind with the boys, and they presented him with a cool birthday cake. Lots of pictures, Joey Styles, Tatanka. So how was that, Dave?
Oh, it was great. It didn't, you know, it didn't last long, but, you know, Tony came up there with the cake. I always think it's funny watching these guys try to do this stuff because they're always terrified of doing it. Taking forever to do it. Just give him the fucking cake. And he gave him the fucking cake, and he was happy as shit. Like, wow, you know, somebody went out of their way. Granted, it's a Entenmann's cake, which you spent a big $6 on. And, you know, he loved the shit out of it. So it was a special moment. You know, the guy looked tired throughout his entire autograph session. So, you know, brought a smile to his face, brought a smile to ours. And, you know, I posted one of the photos up. I think Shining Wizard's got a few more photos that were fortunately taken by some other people who got back to us and posted them on the internet. So it was a really cool, special moment for us. And, you know, guys really down to earth on Thursday for the stand-up. First of all, his stand-up was awesome. It's just him more or less just telling stories. But the guy, you know, he's so artful with it. You know, he still has it. And he even retold a promo that he cut on Sting. And that was like my favorite part of the entire setup. And afterwards, he did a free meet and greet with everybody that was there. You didn't have to buy anything. You know, if you bought the ticket, then you were more than welcome to go up to him. He was selling the Wanted Dead shirts. So, you know, I coughed up some of my hard-earned money, got one of the shirts because it's a fucking classic design, and showed him my photo with Power Rudy because he's the first guy to, you know, one of the first American wrestlers, as far as I know, who dealt with Udi back in the day. And, you know, that whole story is laid out in his first book, Have a Nice Day. Check that out if you haven't. It's fucking incredible. And whole weekend was amazing. After that, PWS went down. Actually, I
well,
bumped
before,
into...
Well, before, let me cut you off. Before we get into PWS, I just want to talk about some of the people that we spoke to.
Before I left.
We actually had a really cool conversation with a former WWE general manager and... American Gladiators announcer, Mr. Mike Adamley, who was a fucking awesome. He just stopped. It's like 10 minutes he gave us, bullshitting with us. I hope Tony picked up some of that audio. I don't know if he did.
The volume is really low on it, so I hope he can salvage it, you know, somehow, some way.
Mike gave us 10 minutes of gold. He was so cool. Loved us. Took our business cards. Might be calling us. That'd be cool. That'd be cool if he called us.
Yeah, he was really candid with us. He, you know, he's actually one of the super ticket guys. So he wasn't in, you know, the main room with everybody else. Like, he's kind of cast off with like a selected amount of guys.
Right.
So you got to buy special tickets specifically for those guys. And it was really cool that he just, you know, sat with us, you know, bullshitted for a while. And he, you know, he went really in depth. You know, I didn't even know the guy was on the Jets for 7 years.
Yeah, yeah, he played for the
Joe
New York
Namath,
Jets. Yep, yep.
Another legend, and you know, even spoke with us about like his personal love of pro wrestling and you know, his time going out with, I believe it was his sister. You know, just going out to seeing the Tolos brothers wrestle some legends. You know, one of the Tolos brothers, John, the Golden Greek, he later became coach
of the
which
Mr. Perfect,
nobody cared about.
Right, right, right.
But, you know, back in Los Angeles, you know, these guys were vicious heels, and specifically that tag team, the Tolos brothers, are, you know, names that are kind of lost to the past. But when you look back and read up on those guys, they were vicious heels to a T.
Yeah, and he gave us, like I said, 10 minutes of gold. Kevin, Shining Wizards Kevin, was our stick man. He went around with the wireless mic. He spoke to a bunch of people.
Actually, it was Eddie.
Well, Eddie did too, though. Was it Eddie first, then Kevin?
Or it was mainly Eddie.
Just Eddie, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So Eddie had the stick. I'm sorry, I'm thinking of Kevin's last year's run at PWS. But
yeah.
Eddie took the stick. Eddie went around and spoke to a bunch of people. Mainly guys like Superfly Snuka.
That was funny.
yeah, he spoke to a lot of people, man. He spoke to
New Jack.
New Jack was great, giving us a couple of seconds of his time.
He was surprisingly calm.
Well, he's over 50 years old, so I mean, the guy's, you know,
he's beat to shit. So
yeah, I'm not a big fan of New Jack, but you know what? He was cool.
He's not as ornery as he used to be back in the day.
No, not at all. But Eddie went around and got like a lot of words from really some nice people and old school wrestlers in the industry, which is really cool. And then, like Dave said, fast forward that evening, Dave, you went to PWS in Rahway.
Yeah.
And how was that?
It was great. I actually ran into Just Incredible in the parking lot, and I was like, oh, let me walk you in. So we just walked in through the back, and actually right through the door was actually the table where he was doing the autographs, and I was helping out Eddie with his table. He was vending Davey Boy Smith Jr. and Lance Hoyt.
The Killer Elite Squad
yeah. from New Japan Pro Wrestling. And that was my second time handling Harry Smith, or Davey Boy Smith Jr., as he's known over there. He's a nice guy, but I'll be straight up. They said some, you know, guys on Shining Wizard said something completely different. I get a different vibe off of this guy. He's a nice guy, but he's very strange to me. He's one of those guys, like, you look him straight in the eye and you tell him, you know, whatever. And he's just kind of like, it just seems like he's in his own world. That's just my opinion. You know, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. He seems like a funny guy, but he comes off a bit strange to me.
All right.
He called me snooker for some reason. And I looked at him. I was like, what the hell does snooker mean? And he's like, you're just saying random stuff to people. And he just looked at me just kind of like with a blank face, like, yeah, smiled and then went back to what he was doing.
No. Is he strange, like he's just trying to zone you out, or strange, like he doesn't give a shit?
It seems like a little bit of both. The best way I can word it, it just seems like, you know, the guy's been there and back, like a little touch of jadedness and a touch of like just messing around with people just for the sake of having fun.
The boys, I listened to the Shining. Well, first of all, if you're a fan of our show, you're a fan of the Shining Wizards Network, there are three awesome shows up right now besides ours that's going up tonight. The Midnight Jury, they killed it. They had a great show. Kind of angry about some things. They went to the House of Hardcore show in Philly this week, past weekend, and they spoke about that in length.
And, I'm sure they did.
Oh, dude, it's one of their better episodes. I'll leave it as that. I don't want to give it away.
They're good at that kind of stuff.
They are. And you know what? It is what it is. And it's all about opinions, and those guys are good fans, and they respect the business, and they have their own take on things like we do, like everybody else does. The Wizards had Jason Hervey on last night.
That was great.
That was a great interview today, and they spoke about PWS as well.
Which was a fantastic show. We'll get into that soon, but continue.
Yeah. And the Neckbreaker guys did an old school wrestling podcast as well, a metal podcast from 85, so... Again, if you're a fan, and then the rant, forget it, man. Double A and Lee did an open mic, and last night's rant was incredible. If you're a fan of ours, and I always plug their shows, go get their stuff as soon as you're done with our show. It's always good, but this week particularly was really, really good. So, but how was the card at PWS? Getting back to PWS.
Let me go through the. We'll go through the card real quick.
Okay, go ahead, man.
But just a little critiques and criticisms first before we get into the good stuff, just so that's out of the way. Show's a bit long. It went till almost like midnight.
Well, they're always long. The supercards are always long because they're all.
Oh, yeah. The first half featured a lot of like the, you know, the legends or like the well-known guys. To be quite honest, I feel, you know, after I've been to a few PWS shows, maybe not as much as the other, you know, those guys, but I'm sure they'll agree with me on this. And I really feel that they need to start straying away from, you know, having some of these legends on the show and focus more on their guys, because their guys are really kicking ass. Like the PWS, like, you know, their guys going against their guys. Those matches were incredible. They were really strutting their stuff that night. And you could tell that the hard work is paying off. You know, I remember the first PWS show I went to, which I believe was a super card. And it was a extremely long night. It went had to have been over 4 hours. Matches were god awful. One Warrior Nation was there too. And it was just a horrible show. And actually, I remember Matt from the Shining Wizards got in trouble for voicing his opinion on the show. PWS is, you know, that wasn't that long ago. I want to say it's about 2 years ago.
What do you mean got in trouble?
He was talking, he just went off on how garbage the show was. But he came in maybe like halfway through or maybe three quarters into the show.
Oh, right. I remember that. Yeah. Okay.
That was like 2 years ago.
I remember that.
Yeah, oh. They patched things up, and PWS has come light years away from that show.
Well, let me ask you something before you finish up. I agree. I think them having all these legends four or five hours of wrestling is great. I can't take my 7-year-old to a 4 or 5 hour show.
No.
Can't, you know, Mikey's a good kid, but even at that point, he'll be unbearable.
Yeah, there's no air conditioning. It was hot as hell.
Right.
I'm sure a lot of people were just leaving because there was a point where I think for a lot of people it was like totally intolerable. But you know, that has nothing to do with PWS. You know,
they just rent the building. I get it.
Rent the building.
My question though is do you think? I mean, I think so, and you think so, but do you think PWS is confident enough to start running shows without signing the big talent to get them in?
I don't think so.
You don't. So,
in my opinion,
because
I'm not the biggest PWS guy, but I know that, you know, for instance, a Supercard is packing it. You know, they had almost like 1,600 people there, and I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of that was due to Bret Hart being there and Booker T being there.
Right.
That was a huge sell. And then there was other legends there too.
They draw about 1,000 people a show on the regulars. I mean, the last show I was at, they drew maybe a couple of hundred. They, you know, the one, the last show, the was it not the May show, the April show,
mm-hmm.
the one I just got a fucking moving, a ticket on. They ran a fucking red light in Rawway. Yeah, April 28th. That was the last show I was at, and they drew a decent amount of people.
Yeah,
you know? And then they had Jeff Jarrett the next month, and like Dave said, Saturday they had Booker T and Bret Hart. I think they're getting to the point now where, you know, once they get the venue back up to snuff, because you know Sandy destroyed their venue.
Yeah.
Once they get that going again, and I think you know Pat and Eric are pretty smart guys, and they're going to get, you know what, I can actually see them getting like a public access deal in Jersey and maybe parts of Philly and maybe even in New York, like, you know, sort of like what NWA on Fire did.
Yeah.
You know, so,
I think that would be great for them because they have the school, you know, going on. They have a lot of great talent there. Guys there are super over. Fans love them. They're doing better than TNA.
they draw better than TNA.
Oh, they draw significantly better than
TNA.
What was it? They had like 300. They had 300 people at that minor league park.
Where, New York went last year?
No, I don't remember.
Oh, the minor league park just recently. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. No, I don't know where that was. But,
I don't know, but the one I went to was almost 1,000 people. So
yeah,
but that's in Brooklyn. So.
And New York's a different
animal. All right, so finish the card, brother. Who was on the card?
Yeah, let's. Real quick. I'm gonna go over the card like super quick, so we can get into other stuff. You got a wrestler called CPA, Certified Public, you know, Certified Personal Accountant, or whatever that stands for. Won the Super Cup Battle Royal, which was that was great. All PWS guys. I was marking out for it. I love Battle Royals, and this one was done. Quite well. This is part of the pre-show. Untouchables defeated Brian XL, Amazing Red
from House of Glory. That's my hometown of Ridgewood. Good school, good people.
Yeah, versus the BWO. They were there. They were great. And the Handicap Heroes, Zach Gowan and Gregory Irons.
Right.
Another fantastic match.
Yeah, they came to our table at Legends.
Yeah, they came up to us. And okay, on to the main show. Chris Payne defeated Bobby Wayward.
Mm-hmm.
And this is funny. I'll bring this up because I posted the photo of me with these guys, the Boosaw Nation. These are just like a group of friends who, you know, I'm friends with these guys. They're actually filmmakers, and I've worked with them in the past. So it's funny that they've been going to these PWS shows. So I hooked up with them, and they had this sign for this dude, Bobby Wayward, and they just kept going, Wayward, Wayward, the entire match. And they had this really long sign that just said, Wayward. There was like 17 A's in this sign. And it was hilarious, you know, sitting down and hanging out with these guys for the show. It's very rare when you get to be with a group of guys who get it. They're all on the same page. And it's like, hey, we're going to annoy the shit out of these wrestlers. We're going to have fun. And we're going to wake up this, you know, boring ass crowd. Because, you know, as much as great as the PWS shows are, you know, fans are a bit jaded. We know that, you know, not everybody's all riled up and wants to do funny chants and stuff like that at shows. So these guys are, you know, kicking the audience's butt. They're getting the attention of the wrestlers in the crowd. It's, you know, providing this dynamic that is untouchable, in my opinion. I'll get to their thing with Bonesaw later on, who's one of the wrestlers there. Next match, Mason Ryan, who is like, it seemed like five guys put into one guy. This guy is so fucking huge.
Yeah.
And he defeated the lifeguard. And
who's also another over character over there.
Yeah. And, you know, funny thing I heard, I ran into somebody who I worked with on the Warrior University show. And he was telling me that him and Warrior were working with the lifeguard. I don't know to what capacity. It was brief conversation with this guy, but I found that interesting. We'll have to get some confirmation maybe from the Wizards or something, but apparently Warrior was working with the lifeguard, you know, before he passed. But Mason Ryan ended up getting the win on that, and you know, it was funny as shit. As soon as the match starts, lifeguard runs into him and falls to the ground, you know, and everybody starts chanting, "You still got it."
That's awesome.
So put a big smile on his face. Craig Steele versus Buff Bagwell. This was such
a big deal, Craig.
The big deal,
Craig.
Match.
The big deal. The big deal, Craig Steele.
The big deal, Craig Steele. My apologies. This was probably the worst match of the night, and you know, what was it like last week? We saw Buff Bagwell do a Canadian Destroyer.
No, Styles Clash. Was it a
No, yeah. No, it was Canadian Destroyer.
Was it? I forget.
Yeah, he's and the fucking dude kicked out on the video.
He's a disaster.
So but this match was really bad, but Buff Bagwell's like taunting the crowds. He called the crowd a bunch of fags, which I thought was great.
Great. Bunch of kids there. Good job, Buff.
Yeah, well, this is the Rahway Rec Center, like especially since Jersey All-Pro was running there. They have no rules as far as, you know, cursing in front of kids. It's, you know, it sucks. But
no, yeah, I guess I'm in a different place now, you know.
It just the way it goes.
I guess.
Yeah. Bret Hart was there. That just seemed like a huge waste of time because he just came in the ring. You could hardly hear what he was saying. He said Jersey was a nice place.
He hasn't been to Camden or Newark, so.
Yeah, and if he has, I'm sure he's just being placating the crowd.
Right.
Yeah, he was out there for a few minutes. Couldn't really hear what the dude was saying. My favorite match of the night, Reynolds Brothers defeated the Lone Rangers for PWS tag belts in a ladder match. And this was an incredible match. These guys really put their bodies on the line, especially since the ladders that they were using were just – they were just like those cheap aluminum, like painter's ladders.
Yeah. You know what? I'm a big fan of both teams. The Lone Rangers had a great match against, the fuck they fight in April. Oh, I forget now. Was it, might've been Reality Check. I forget, but, did Pat Buck wear his fucking weight belt on?
Yeah. He was wearing a Randy the Ram outfit.
Oh Jesus, Pat, you gotta take that belt off, buddy. You gotta poke an eye out with that thing.
But
they're a good team, though. They're a good team. And
yeah,
Pat
Buck is he's a fine athlete.
Yeah,
great
pack
wrestler,
and go. Yeah, pack
but
and
he
go.
Has poor taste in ring wear.
Pat also with the 2.5 wrestlers. Another, they have another good episode up with Jay Silva and Kevin Matthews. Now, I think the Reynolds brothers are the first team to have all the gold in PWS.
Really?
Yeah. If I'm mistaken, please, guys, correct me. The Wizards and whoever else is a fan of PWS. So I heard they stole the show. Apparently, it was a good match.
Yeah, for me, there was actually that wasn't the only one, but you know, we're getting to that.
Go ahead.
Low-key defeated Rhino. It's a decent match. I just wish I think that was like the third match to end in like a roll-up or a small package. So part of me was like, another one of these. But the match itself was pretty solid. Following match, Hurricane Helms and Colt Cabana, they were going against each other, and it was crashed by the Killer Elite Squad, Davey Boy Smith Jr. and Lance Hoyt, who basically told them, they're here to kick ass and chew bubblegum, and they're all out of bubblegum. So.
I
guess in Davey Boy Smith Jr.'s, because this dude had me going back and forth for Diet Pepsi's for him. I guess they were there to kick ass and drink Diet Pepsi, and they ran out of Diet.
Nothing wrong with that. Did the Hurricane come in his garb?
He's their full outfit.
So they wound up having a tag match?
Yeah, the guest commissioner Booker T declared that this was going to be a tag match, and it was a decent match. I felt it could have been better with the talent that was in there, but it was what it was. You know, just fun just to see those guys in the ring all together, and it's not every day you get to see the Killer Elite Squad wrestle in New Jersey, so it was fun. Next match after that, this was another one of the top three matches for me. Cemento Family were defeated by Reality Check in a Fans Bring the Weapons match.
Nice.
And one of those weapons, again, you know, not very child friendly, but fans brought the weapons. There was a dildo in the garbage can that filled all the fans' weapons. And funny enough, it was brought by the Boosaw movement.
Of course it was.
And there was plenty of the manager of the Cemento family went down on this dildo more than once during this match.
Well, I'm glad. I'm kind of glad my son didn't go to that match then. All right.
Yeah. And there was a big use the dildo chant throughout the match.
I'm not surprised. It's fucking New Jersey.
You
bunch of animals. All right, what was the next match?
Women's match. That was boring. Going to skip that.
Was it Missy Sampson? Did Missy Sampson fight?
What?
Missy Sampson, she didn't fight? Or who was it?
Yeah, she was in that. She was in that. It just was nothing to really talk about.
Okay, moving on.
PWS title match. Streak versus Streak.
Bukhara.
What's that?
Mario Bukhara.
Yes, the Croatian sensation.
That's right.
The champion, undefeated champion, went against Bonesaw, and Boosaw movement was in full effect. They had their Spider-Man masks. They were booing the shit out of this guy the entire match. And Bonesaw is supposed to be a face, keep in mind.
Yeah, he was over for a while.
He was over for a while, and these guys, including myself, were just booing the shit out of this guy for the entire match, and the fans were going along with us. So it was just like this, again, it was like such an interesting just dynamic. These guys, they're hell-bent on, this guy switching to a heel, and to my understanding, they want the guy to drop the gimmick because it's, and I understand why. It's, there's a lot of guys in PWS who have these kind of hokey gimmicks. Bonesaw is supposed to be, Bonesaw McGraw from the Spider-Man movies. So they just want the dude to just drop the fucking gimmick. They want him to turn heel. And it's funny as shit. And what was it? They have all these signs. They have the Spider-Man masks. And they've been cutting trailers, too. Like promos. And they're putting them on YouTube. And they're fantastic. Because these guys are filmmakers. And the trailers actually look better than, my apologies to Eddie. I know he's working hard, but they look better than the PWS videos.
And
these guys
are
going all, they're going balls out for it. I love them to death. And this match was really good between Bokara and Bonesaw, and Bokara got the submission on Bonesaw. It was like the technical match of the night. And just really fantastic. And Bokara, I believe he was Mo Sexton, you know, for the longest time. And just a dude who's been around for a long time on the Jersey scene. And it's, you know, it's good to see this guy, you know, on top in PWS. And I'm loving this Croatian gimmick of his.
Yeah. And he's a humble dude. We heard him on the Shining Wizards a few months ago. Yeah, Mario Boca is a good guy. They have great talent there, man. They really do, and I'm not just kissing their ass.
Yeah,
I really do enjoy their shows. It's a breath of fresh air from like the late 80s, early 90s, even to the mid 90s. I was going to USA Pro and stuff like that. And when I got back into the indies in the mid 2000s, you know, it was just Ring of Honor and whatever was floating around.
Yeah,
and then a couple of years ago, I picked up on Chikara, and I picked up on, you know, PWS and a couple other ones, and you know, I'm glad it's a resurgence, man. So was that it, or that was the last quarter?
There's a few more matches. One thing I want to say about Bokara is, after the entire event, you know, we went back into the building for some reason, and he bumped into, me and the rest of the Boosaw guys, and. You know, he was really humble. He was thanking us, and we took a picture with the belt. But he was like, you know, really grateful for. Now, I'm not going to take any of the credit because it's these guys' thing. You know, I just jumped on board with them for that show.
Yeah, I saw the picture.
He was thanking them. You know, was saying like, hey, you're a huge part of the match. You made the fans care even more about the match because we all know sometimes the world title match of the night. You know, a lot of the thunder is taken away from the undercard, you know, so it's sometimes the world championship match can, lose some of its thunder because the fans are tired. They're hot. They're agitated. They saw a bunch of other great matches. So, it was really cool of him to go out of his way like that. Second to last match, Habib from the car wash was subbing for Teddy Hart in the suicidal six way.
Yeah. Teddy Hart. Apparently his friend borrowed his car in Canada and got arrested or some shit.
Yeah,
so Teddy Hart did not show up. Okay, so I heard that guy was crazy over, huh? The Habib guy.
He was insanely over. Him winning the Suicidal Six-Way title was it got the biggest pop of the night. I think the only pop that could rival that was when they had the lights off for most of the show. And there was a point where they turned them on and everybody started cheering because it just looked like shit with they had like these really shitty lighting systems.
Yeah, no, I was there a few months ago and Mike Norganger from the Midnight Jury, and we were there with Adam and a bunch of other guys, and we were like, and Mike even mentioned it on his last show, the lighting there is terrible.
Yeah.
You know?
So when they turned the lights on, everybody started cheering, but, they went to intermission. We came back. They turned the lights off. Everybody started booing. That was the loudest reaction from the crowd. And when they turned the lights on, because everybody was booing, that got the biggest reaction of the night next to Habib. But Habib's was, you know, legit. Like, everybody loves this guy.
Yeah, apparently.
Eddie did an amazing job putting together the video. Shining Wizards Eddie did a great job putting together the video, entranceway video for Habib, which, you know, got such a big reaction. He had to put it up on YouTube, like, I think either that night or the next day for the previous show. And Habib is super over. He even gave me a hello, my name is tag.
Oh, nice. Good for you.
With EP written on it.
Good job. Good job.
Yeah, good guy. He used to be a referee for PWS, so that was cool.
All right.
And last match of the night, Moff's Madness match. Dan Moff against Starman. And,
I heard
probably another match Mikey couldn't watch.
Yeah.
Just like barbed wire, thumbtacks, and the big moment of the night was Dan Moff took face first these fluorescent light tubes tied together, which Shining Wizards Eddie brought from his job. And it was so loud when his head and his face made contact with these lights.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I can't wait to see this. It'll be on Blu-ray in a couple of weeks, hopefully.
Yeah. And it was kind of sickening for me which is funny because I've been to I used to go to a few of the Ace shows over in Jersey City, and there's like these like Puerto Rican dudes who are doing these like hardcore matches, which are like, I don't know, now that I'm like getting a bit older, like in the past I never really gave a shit about it, but when you're at a live show, you know, this guy's getting paid like $25 and he's taking like barbed wire across the face and stuff like that. It's like, what the hell's going on? And I've heard from some of my wrestling friends who've, you know, worked with some of these organizations, like some of these dudes just get off on being in some intense pain. And yeah. I don't know, part of me just, you know, is not really cool with it anymore. So I kind of wasn't too into this match. But if you're into hardcore, like, you got everything, and Dan Moff really destroyed his entire body and head to make a great match, and they didn't disappoint. It was extreme, no doubt about it.
That's cool. We love Dan Moff, and even Starman, whoever's under the mask now. I think it's not who it was. It's somebody else.
Yeah, it's not Joey Janela anymore.
No, it's not Joey Janela anymore.
This guy's ripped. Whoever this guy is,
it was. Well, I won't break kayfabe. I'll just give. I think when I was there, he was in a tag team. So that's all I'm going to say. All right. So that was good. I'm glad you had a good time. Was that it, or was there more?
That was it. That was it. So, for all you guys who are not familiar with PWS,
get on
check them out. Pro Wrestling Syndicate. And I believe their website is ProWrestlingSyndicate.com or BetterNails.com.
BetterNails.com. Get last year's show. Dave and I were there. That was the birth of Mega Powers and Phil Rea for the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. Dave came on shortly after that that courtship. We had a great night that night. Match of the night for me last year was the Rock and Roll Express fighting, in my opinion, the best tag team in the world right now. Well, they were the best tag team in the world, the fucking Briscoes.
Yeah, that match was
off
insane.
The hook.
That was a clinic.
That was for geriatric fucking Rock and Roll Express for the hot tag, and then the Briscoes put them over was even more amazing. Jushin and Thunder Liger took a picture with me. It was such a great night. It was my second PWS show. It was the best one by far. I'm sure this one was amazing. Support indie wrestling anywhere. I know Baza in England supports his. Guys all over the country, guys all over the world, support indie wrestling. It's what makes the fabric of what we root for. You know, no joke. All right, we got a lot of news to get into, Mega Powers.
Yeah, we got a bit of news.
All right. Daniel Bryan was stripped of the World Heavyweight Championship on Raw, which we figured, but apparently his rehab is not going as well as expected. He's losing some sensation in his upper extremities.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, not cool. So they stripped him of the title. Now the WWE World Heavyweight Championship will now be featured as a ladder match at the next pay-per-view, which is Money in the Bank.
Oh, so they're doing a Money in the Bank for the World Heavyweight Championship.
And they're doing a Money in the Bank for the number one contendership, so you're getting two matches.
Wow.
Yeah, the updated list for the combatants are Randy Orton, Cesaro, Sheamus, Alberto Del Rio, and now Bray Wyatt, who defeated Bray, I'm sorry if I'm breaking your hearts about the SmackDown tapings, but last night Bray Wyatt did defeat Dean Ambrose. You'll see it Friday night. So, all right. So that I'm telling you, Money in the Bank is shaping up to be a decent match. You know?
Yeah.
So
I don't know. For me, it doesn't really matter who's in the match. Usually, if there's, you know, a ladder involved, guys really, you know, put their all into making it happen.
Right. All right. This is something I'm very excited about. Came out today. It was announced on Monday. After an absence from Topps Baseball Cards Company, WWE line Chrome returns. Premium cards have been a favorite in the sport for years, dating back to their debut in 1996. The WWE-based brand series will really stun collectors, says art director Colin Walton. Metal etching treatments really make the photos pop, while thicker coating ensures the cards remain well-protected through the years. All base cards will be featured biographies and analysis from legendary broadcast and Hall of Famer good old JR and longtime veterans like John Cena, and legends such as Bruno Sammartino and, get this, NXT prospects, including new NXT champion Charlotte. Tops of the interest to the passionate card collector. There'll be on-card autographs, collector's items, including from wrestlers from Alicia Fox, Roman Reigns, and Kane. As part of the lineup, relics include swatches of Undertaker's hat, ring mats from the Royal Rumble, pieces of the ring mat on cards, medallion cards, champ. There's a whole bunch of shit. There's going to be Jerry Lawler's putting his artwork in it. They're going to have documenting careers of heroes past, just Eddie Guerrero. They're going to have printing plates. It's going to be fucking awesome. Comes out today. I know Michael's going to be excited. Maybe we'll get some for his birthday on Friday. And
imagine the guys had to cut up the ring mat to put in these baseball cards or, you know, wrestling cards. Rather.
Well, I have a piece of WrestleMania 20, that mat in from a DVD collection I picked up sitting here in the Decadome.
You had a piece of the mat in there?
Yeah, it's in the middle. It's in the middle shelf where the collectibles are. I'll show you the next.
Is it a big piece or like a little?
No,
little...
it's a little square. It's a little piece of a square inside of a plastic frame.
Imagine the guys that got to sit down there and like cut up this ring mat just.
Well,
to...
no, but they do it in football and baseball and hockey now. What they do is they take certain game jerseys and they have a machine. I saw it made. It's pretty cool. They cut the pieces and they put them on the cards.
Really?
It's very tedious, but the machine does it. I mean, they don't have a fucking Central American lady doing it in the back, you know?
See, they're taking jobs away from the American people.
America.
Illegal American people.
Right.
Who want to be legal. They took our jobs.
All right. Ric Flair passed his physical in Pittsburgh, and he could return to TV as early as this Monday. Coming Monday on Raw. Word is that Flair just came in that Flair passed those tests and should be back on TV very soon, as of maybe Monday. Ironically enough, The Miz just got back from filming The Marine. I don't know what the fuck it is, 7.
Okay.
The rumor is he's supposed to be managing The Miz. So they guess they're going
to
repack
it. Well, we all know what happened to the other guy that starred in the Marine movie.
Right. Well, I like Ric Flair as a non-competitor on TV. Call me.
He's lost his touch
in the ring, of course.
Yeah,
I don't. You put him, put a suit on him, and let him talk. He'll put half that locker room to shame. I don't give a shit.
Even him with his drunken little thing with the shield and Evolution.
I don't give a shit what exactly. I don't give a shit.
It was
what
fun.
I don't care what anybody tells me. That dude can cut a fucking promo in his sleep.
Yeah,
if you heard my pre-show,
first day he can do a great promo.
No joke. So Flair back on TV. Please, please, pray to God he's not in the fucking ring.
Yeah.
So, all right. PW Insider reports that scenes are being filmed for an upcoming WWE
Sting
DVD documentary. As B-roll video, WWE is looking for Sting-related material in the future, and I heard they're looking for, like, body doubles and stuff, too. I don't know what the fuck he's doing, but... I don't know.
I think our boy Harry needs to catch a flight and get in on that.
Listen, Harry's in the fucking room. Harry is hopped up on fucking toddlers and Red Bull and waiting for this World Cup. A very stoked couple hours World Cup.
Mainlining straight up adrenaline.
Yeah, I don't know, Harry. I watched the pre thing today, the opening thing for the cup. It's gonna be a fun. I was talking to Harry all day. The cups will be a rough tournament this year. The brackets are really good. All right. John Cena, Cesaro, Bray Wyatt, Hulk Hogan are confirmed. The first names confirmed for the new WWE 2K15 video game. The poster was revealed at the E3 video game conference in Los Angeles this past week. Sugar Shane in the room. What's up, Sugar Shane?
Sup.
All right. Mega Powers, do you have any Facebook questions?
Yeah, we got a bunch of questions here.
Let's do some Facebook questions. Say what's up to the chat room. Maverick, Big Mav, what's up, Tommy? Tommy's in there.
Maverick.
Our buddy Tom. Not Tank, the other Tom. Let's see. Ajax is in there. Axel Foley's in there. Scott's in there. Good job. All right.
Well, the classic lineup is in there.
Peoples is in there, yo. All right, Mega Powers. You got some Facebook questions for me, sir?
Yeah, we got a bunch here. First one from Baza. If you could sit and talk wrestling with anyone from history, who would it be and why?
Jesus. I think I answered this some months ago, but I'd probably want to sit with probably Flair, but like 10 years ago Flair. Maybe Bruno Sammartino and probably Paul Heyman.
Mm.
What about you?
Three come to mind. right now. I know it's only one, but I want to pick three. Actually, four guys.
Yeah, this dude, I can do 10.
And this is probably going to the next question too. Flair, Macho Man, Savage, Warrior, and Great Muda are the guys who I'd love to talk to.
Does Muda speak English?
I've heard some rumors that he does, but you know, whenever he does any interviews and stuff like that, he doesn't bother.
He doesn't have to. He's the Great Muda.
Yeah, I'm thinking the guy's just like, you know, maybe that's the way that he just stays in kayfabe, you know?
Pretty much. All right, go ahead.
Next question is from Harry, who's in the room.
Harry.
If you could book a Legends of Wrestling roundtable, what subject would you choose, and who would your guest be?
Oh, Jesus. I mean...
That's a fucking tough question.
Well, but I would probably do a roundtable about Jim Crockett Promotions, the NWA. Mm. So I would have Flair, Dusty, David Crockett, you know, guys like that. Maybe J.J. Dillon. I don't know. Michael Hayes again. I put Michael Hayes because he was a part of that for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Lex Luger, you could put in there. Sting, you could put in there. Nikita Koloff, you could put in there. Jimmy Cornette, you could put in there. Paul Heyman, you could put in there. There's so many guys that worked for Crockett in the NWA and then WCW at that time. It's my favorite era of wrestling. So, you know, that's pretty much it.
For me, I would have the guys I mentioned. Well, maybe without Muda. And I'll get into that soon. Maybe throw in Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard,
yeah,
J.J. Dillon, Jim Ross, Dusty Rhodes. Who else am I thinking? You know, Mean Gene, because he's hilarious. And just talk about road stories. I just want to hear about road stories.
Don't forget Beautiful Blobby. You're right. Everybody beautiful likes Blobby. That Beautiful Blobby.
Well, we're going to be talking about Beautiful Blobby a little bit later.
We certainly are. What's the next question, Mega Powers?
From Sugar Shane.
Sugar Shane.
Says, I know this is kind of taboo when it comes to gimmicks, but what do you think has the best gangster hood gimmick of all time?
Ooh. It's got to be the gangsters.
I was about to say that, too.
The gangsters... You could thank Jimmy Cornette for this because the Smoky Mountain shit was fucking nuts with the Funks and Public Enemy and the Rock and Roll Express.
I never saw that stuff, but I read about it in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. And to me, it just seemed like some like really ratchet shit was going down in Smoky Mountain.
Well, we have to get our hands on Smoky Mountain Wrestling. We have to.
I've seen a few videos, but I didn't look too in-depth, but I'm sure it's all on there. I'm sure there's guys who, you know, have tapes of all those shows and stuff like that. We're going to find it.
We got to hook up with some – we got to.
We're going to have some ghetto-ass wrestling shows down the road.
We're not lying. So, yeah, the gangsters, you know, they lived it. And I was in the ECW arena when it was a hot August night, and this is before the redo. And we'll probably do a podcast on this particular. I think it was Hardcore Heaven 95 or something like that. They came in for the first time and they jumped Public Enemy.
Uh-huh.
And I got back to my hotel room and I was like, this is fucked up.
Like, yeah.
I fucking hated the gangsters. I'm like, here we go. And they cut. And then I hated the gangsters because I love Public Enemy. But then the next week, they cut a promo and I was sitting in my room. I was like, man, are you kidding me? These guys, I mean, Public Enemy was okay. They were white guys trying to be black, but the gangsters cut.
They were black. They were really black.
Yeah, and like Mustafa said seven words and he was over. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
New Jack did most of the talking, and New Jack, to his credit, one of the best talkers in the business, even though I can't stand them. But they were a great team. So
yeah, shit was on with that. Actually, Axel is asking in the room if Vince is trying to get the Smoky Mountain Library. He already owns that.
He owns that.
They've had some on the. They don't really put too many of those matches on there, but I think on one of the ladder match DVDs, the War Games Blu-ray.
It's on a War Games.
And one of Foley's DVDs, I think it's the Greatest Hits and Misses, has a Smoky Mountain match on there, so he does own it already. Next question from Tony C.
Well, before we get to Tony C's question, I want to wish him a very happy congrats. He's getting married in a couple of days. So,
oh, really? Yeah, I'm going to have to crash that wedding.
You know what? You might have to. And last night, they were Surfer was asking if there's going to be any yard birds served at the wedding. So I sent AA a message. I was like, hopefully it's extra crispy. So, Tony C., we love you.
Yeah.
Congrats on your nuptials. That's it, man. So, what's Tony C.'s question?
He worded this like in such a dumb way. So, is Goldust a Hall of Famer? I think what he's trying to say is Goldust, you know, Hall of Fame worthy? And I think he is. I believe he is. Not just because of being a member of the Rhodes family, but the Goldust character has been persistent in professional wrestling, specifically, you know, obviously WWE. We're not talking about Seven and WCW here. But that character, when it first came out, was really groundbreaking because, you know, we've had our Adrian Adonises, our Adrian Streets, our Lanny Poffos with the kind of androgynous kind of cross-dressing thing. But Goldust took it to a whole new level. He was over from the start. And he's one of these dudes who continues to stay in peak conditioning, and he could still go. He goes better than a lot of the new guys.
I'll agree, and I'll add this to it. I think the Hall of Fame questions we get, not to shit on our fans at all, because we love our fans to death. They're the reason why we do the show. But I think what the fans are not getting of the Hall of Fame period is think about their contribution to the industry. Like Dave mentioned, he was way over. His character was way over the top. And it was in an era where he got away with it. He has it now, but it's so toned down. And plus, he's a Rhodes. You know, he had that talent. He was great as Dustin Rhodes.
Yeah.
You know? So I mean, you know, I think Dustin Rhodes and himself as a wrestler should get in, and his contribution as Goldust should be mentioned, or vice versa.
Yeah, he was a tag team champion in WCW as well as United States champion.
Yeah,
and had some great matches over there. You know, had a great feud with Rick Rude as well as Stunning Steve Austin.
Yeah, we're not gonna talk about the Blacktop Bully match, but
Hey, that was a great one too.
Well, it's the reason why he was fired, but that's besides
the point. Think of the Road match,
right? In back of a fucking semi. All right, what's the next?
Was he with bleeding during a?
Yeah, he wasn't supposed
to. Censored, which made no sense.
Right. Again, WCW dropped the ball on so many occasions with certain guys, and then of course they would follow it up with gold. So
yeah,
what do you call
Scott?
Oh, Scott's got a question.
Scott's got a question. You want to play it?
Scott,
there you go. Hey,
if you were to book Legends House 2, who would be in it? So I'm going to start off with this one.
Didn't somebody ask us that like 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. The Horsemen. Going to have the Horsemen in there.
I would book fucking Jobbers. And guys, listen to the show more. I don't want to answer this question
more. Stop asking the same goddamn questions.
God damn it.
Love Scott's Scott. In the room all the time. So anyway.
Maybe Scott didn't listen to the show. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't
know what to tell you. Turn up your hearing aid, Pops.
Open your ears, jackass. All right, what's the
all
next
right,
one?
Birthday Boy Eric says, who are your top three favorite United States tag team champions of all time?
Ooh, well, of course, the Midnight Express.
Yeah.
I would say the Steiners.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I guess not the maybe the Fantastics? I don't know.
Yeah. Actually, those were the three guys I was going to pick.
No, you did, yeah?
Yeah, honorable mention to the Freebirds.
Yeah, Freebirds, Varsity Club.
Yeah, Varsity Club were U.S. tag champs, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. I think the Road Warriors, too, I'm not sure. I have to look it up, guys.
I think they just went straight for the world championships.
It's all right, Scott. We still love you.
Yeah.
All right, is there any more questions, Mega Powers?
We got two more.
Oh, Wyndham and Dustin Rhodes. I forgot, yeah. Forgot about that. Thank you, Axel.
Mm. So, Tony Segan says, do you think William Regal should go in the Hall of Fame? Yeah,
absolutely.
But I don't think he's not somebody who's going to get be rushed into the Hall of Fame.
No, either. These guys aren't going to get in right away because there's so many guys that aren't in.
Yeah.
A lot of dead guys that aren't in that should be in. I mean, it's not – listen – it's not really like a sports Hall of Fame where there's sports writers that fucking have to vote you in. This is a politics thing, you know? If, like, again, Lanny Poffo just made nice with Savage. I mean, with the Savage name, with the McMahons.
Yeah.
So now you're going to see a bunch of Savage stuff getting put out.
Yeah, well, they got the Savage Blu-ray coming out eventually, and his brother Lanny's been on WWE television recently, so I feel it's going to be happening next Hall of Fame. Macho Man's going in.
Right. Ajax, I don't know if Doc and Gordy were U.S. tag. I don't think they won any belts in the States.
No, they won tag team championships. The unified NWA, WCW tag championships.
Did they?
Yeah.
They held it briefly, though, right?
Huh?
They held it briefly because they were
back and forth in Japan. They won the tag tournament.
Yeah, they won it for the titles, though.
Yeah.
Were they really?
Yeah, they were.
All right.
And remember, Bash at the Beach Blast 92, they faced the Steiners as champions.
As champions, that's right.
Against the Steiners.
That's actually on the Clash of the Champions DVD.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
That was another match. Okay, last question from our boy Honeydew Tank. Guys, do you think WWE will use Steve Borden the right way or bury him like all the other WCW guys? And what are the chances we see my fellow Muppets make the Hall of Fame?
I don't think they're going to misuse Sting. I think Sting is at this point at a non-wrestling capacity. I think that window that was open for him to wrestle has closed. I think you mentioned it on Facebook a few weeks ago that you were kind of getting impatient with it when the Sting rumbling started coming along.
Yeah.
I know Harry posted an article in the room a few days ago. I don't think they're going to misuse Sting. They're going to use him a lot for their NWA and WCW library stuff for the network. They're going to put him on a Legends contract with the Round Table. And I think maybe he'll be like a GM, which would be fantastic because Sting has been an authority figure in TNA. And as much as people shit on it, I thought it was pretty cool that he was an authority figure.
Because like at least one last match, and then he can do the GM shit. And
he
all
walks
that.
Around with a baseball bat. The last guy with that an authority figure with a baseball bat was Joe Clark. So you know, and look that up, guys. If you're a fan of Lean on Me, the movie. Morgan Freeman played
one
Joe
more
Clark.
Match.
I disagree, Dave. I don't. 55 years old. We saw Taker fucking crawl in his last two other matches. He had Mania. I'm sorry, dude. I don't mind seeing
Sting crawl one last time.
I don't like these guys that are my heroes growing up getting in the fucking ring and pretending that they can still go. I'm sorry. I don't think it's good for business. I don't think it's good for us older fans, and I don't think it's good for the young guys who didn't see them in their prime, and you know, have that ability to be like, oh, I mean, I told you, dude, watching Taker those last two times was fucking awful, man. That was terrible for me.
We can agree to disagree.
All right, yeah. All right, so listen, let's take a quick break. I'm going to wet the whistle, check the Rangers score, and mute our mics. We'll play some plugs of our friends.
Take a hot steaming dump if you need to.
If you got a visit from Mr. Poopy J, go ahead. guys, be with us. We're back about 3 to 4 minutes. We are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be right back.
Back.
Hey, kids. You like the show? Do you like the logo on the show? Well, we put the logo on a T-shirt. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/turnbuckle throwbacks and buy the shirt. The shirt is cheap, and it helps the show with original artwork by Dean Stahl. So what the hell are you waiting for? ProWrestlingTees.com/TurnbuckleThrowbacks. Buy the shirt. Buy the shirt. Buy the shirt!
Hey everyone, this is Justin Anderson, one of your hosts from the Inconclusive Breakdown Podcast, where each week we break down the news in the world of geek culture, entertainment, professional wrestling, sports, and music. We also give our spin on the typical top 10 lists and fan cast our own movies. That's the Inconclusive Breakdown Podcast, available on iTunes, Stitcher, or download from inconclusivebreakdown.libsyn.com.
Hey, hey! Thelonious Punk here, and I'm interrupting an otherwise quality podcast to let you know about our little show, NXT Cast. It's the only international podcast devoted to the future of the WWE, NXT. I'm joined each week by Chris NXN Nixon and the Austrian cyborg Bernard Binder to go over the latest NXT rumours and news, as well as an in-depth analysis of the latest episodes and the current roster. So if you're looking for a wrestling podcast that covers arguably the best in-ring product that WWE is producing today, then find us on Stitcher, iTunes, Podomatic, and NXTcast.net, the international podcast devoted to the yellow and black, NXTcast.
This is Dustin Rhodes, the Bullet of Woods, the three-time world heavyweight champion, baby. And when I'm not getting funky like a monkey, when I'm not looking for baby doll, and when I'm not getting my ass kicked by the four horsemen, I'm listening to Mega Powers Radio, baby, on geeksoftheindustry.com, iTunes, Stitcher, and at the end of a lightning bolt. Ooh, Blue Eyed Soul, Dustin Rhodes, getting funky like a monkey with the Mega Powers Radio, if you will.
G'day folks, AJ here. When you finish listening to this fucking podcast, head on over to iTunes or Stitcher and check out myself, Lee and Punch on the fucking Bloke Show.
We talk about a whole variety of topics like comics, cartoons, movies, television, and sports.
And we're often joined by guests like Deck from Ireland and other friends from all over this wonderful planet.
Once a month, we jump into the DeLorean and take a look at the history of professional wrestling.
And once a month, we look back at actual history with TWiT, This Week in Time.
And once a month, we talk about whatever the fuck we want to talk about.
So please follow us on Twitter at TBSPOD.
And talk to us in the Facebook group, The Bloke Show.
And I don't give a fuck what you cunts do, just listen to this fucking thing.
Hey, it's your boy, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Ray, inviting you to go to ShiningWizardsNetwork.com to check out my boys, the Shining Wizards. They're four tools from Jersey who talk about the good, the bad, the ups and downs of professional wrestling. And, of course, they always piss somebody off in the process. But they're always going to make you laugh. Check them out exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network. Go to ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. Entertainment here. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Hey, it's your boy, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, inviting you to listen to The Midnight Jury. Mike Dorengonger and Adam Henning host The Midnight Jury, a podcast that transports you back to the last old-school generation, my generation. They debate in detail 80s and 90s pro wrestling, horror movies, and pop culture. Before the internet, before Blu-ray, before cell phones, there was the last old-school generation. Check out The Midnight Jury on the Shining Wizards Network. ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. Entertainment here. Buddy.
Ow!
Yeah, man.
You know, I gotta say, I really love, and I always look forward to the commercials during the break.
Why is that?
I just love how well they're done. I love the Murder, She Wrote theme.
You like
with Thelonious Punk's voice over it. It just sounds magical.
Well, shout out to I appreciate that. Thank you. I put a lot of work into the show. Labor of love, obviously.
You do a perfect job, Phil.
I'm trying. I think, you know, to keep it fresh, and we have so many shows I'm a fan of, that, you know, sometimes if I forget to read one off at the end, I can play their stuff and they send me stuff, and, you know, it's our friends, and we have a nice network of shows to support. So, again, like I mentioned in the beginning of the show, support your indies, support your podcasts, support 80s music. I know Phil Collins never made a bad song. Axel, I agree. Neither did Mike and Mechanics. Thank you, Matt. I'm old. I will be officially old in August, so now I'm showing my age. I'm going to be playing a lot of 80s music. Deal with it.
Oh, we got a great song that I picked to end the show.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because Dave and I mentioned this a couple of times. how Dave and I prep for the show, if we're not talking on the phone or we're not in person, we swap messages back and forth via text or Facebook.
Because we got strange schedules. We can't always talk. So we just hit up the Facebook Messenger. And
right, yeah, because we're very – we do everything on our phone now. Yeah. So Dave sends me this clip, and I was like,
why?
Now, don't get me wrong. I own everything this artist does. And he was like, because it's him. And I thought about it for a second, and I'm like, okay. and then I say okay, and if I disagree, obviously I'll tell him. But I let it marinate for a little while, because this is what Phil does when he has a lot of downtime. And
yes.
Like, man, I was like, you know what? I was like, he's on point, because I would just because I pull out shit. Like, if you look at my iPod, I got everything from John Cicada to Slayer. You know what I'm saying? So for me,
yeah,
it's like
we had a Steve Winwood conversation in the car back.
Oh my god! And it's like, okay, yeah, I was telling Mega Powers that I'm a little older than my wife, and God bless her. One day we were in a car ride somewhere in Jersey, and we listened to Satellite, and of course Stevie Winwood comes on. I'm like, oh, this is great. And she's like, who's he? And I'm like, what?
Huh?
You don't know who Steve Winwood is?
You
know, I do like a Scooby Doo or like a Parker Lewis.
Well, no, this is a Tim, the Tool Man Taylor.
Yeah. So, you know, but Dave and I have a lot of same, even though I'm a lot older than Dave, we have a lot of similar taste in music. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
And we are glad that we shared that with you guys. And I have Valerie on fucking 45 record, Axel.
Oh,
how do you like that, buddy? 1988, Valerie, when Steve Winwood made his comeback. When they were playing his songs during Michelob commercials. We got to pull those up for a show one night.
Yeah, but we got a great 80s hit. I think it was a 90s hit, but anyway.
No, that was 80s. That was 80s. And I played Easy Lover because I think this is around, 85 was Easy Lover, I think 85 or 86. But
yeah, and wasn't it a Starcade theme or?
No, it was WWF. It was like Superstars. Like they would play it in between Superstars or Champ or whatever one of those are.
Saturday Night's Main Event?
Yeah, something like that. So
they had a Phil Collins song for Saturday Night's Main Event. I forgot which one.
Take Me Home.
Yeah, that was it, at the end of the show.
It's a good video.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into our throwback of the week.
And now, here is your throwback of the week, sponsored by the Shining Wizards Network and Rant EM Radio.
All right, let's ring the bell. All right, so now this particular throwback. Wait a minute.
Hey.
Wait a minute.
Felonious Punk.
Hey. We don't want to hear Felonious Punk.
See, it has a mind of its own. It knows I love the song, so it just wanted to start playing itself.
Right. All right. So pretty much this particular thing. This was a joint venture. Now I wasn't going to do it this early in the year, but Dave said, "Let's do it." I said, yeah, we'll do it.
Yeah, I've been itching to watch this because I've seen some of the matches on here, and particularly the Bunkhouse Stampede Battle Royal, which is in a cage. And I mentioned it before. I had this one tape called WCW's Greatest Grudges, and I had it when I was very young, and there are some fucking gruesome matches on there. I was almost kind of scarred as a kid when I was watching this, but I couldn't – it's kind of like a horror movie when you're a kid. Like, you can't – take your eyes off the screen, even though you're absolutely terrified of what you're seeing, because it had the Magnum TA Blanchard I Quit match. It had Road Warriors throwing the spike in
Dusty's eye.
Mm-hmm. And it had the Bunkhouse Stampede Battle Royal in the cage match.
So the Bunkhouse Stampede concept started in 1985. There was four of them. And it was
obviously... Dusty won them all.
Right. Dusty won them all, which was... Well, first of all, this particular one was voted one of the worst cards of all time by multiple websites and message boards, just so you know. But there's gems in every bad card, so.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I'll say this real quick. I didn't think it was horrible, but for NWA standards, this was kind of like a subpar event. Like, it's still entertaining. I watched it twice, which I don't really have time to watch anything during the week, and I watched this twice. So that says a lot right there.
So the concept was the Jim Crockett Promotions came up with the new match to came up with a new match to increase the interest of the fans and in their product, you know?
Yeah.
The Stampede was a regular battle royal where the wrestlers wore bunkhouse gear, quote unquote. I'm doing air quotes, nobody sees it but the cat. Blue jeans, cowboy boots, etc.
And tube tops, according to Axel Foley.
Similar.
Well, Arn Anderson's attire for this bunkhouse stampede was questionable.
Right. Similar to a street fight, weapons were allowed. For example, the Kowals brought their Russian chains. The Road Warriors brought their spikes. Others used trash can lids and leather straps. To win the match, a wrestler had to be the last one in the ring with all the other wrestlers having been thrown over the top rope. These were not often... they were often bloody, as Dave mentioned.
Yeah, and surprisingly, there was no dildos in this match.
No dildos in this match.
Usaw movement was not around during this time.
No. Anyway, so now this is the third installment we'll get to, but each year there were several bunkhouse stampedes held in prior weeks, sort of like the Great American Bash Tour, with the winners of each one going to the finals. The battle for the championship. It began, like I said, in 85. Last one was in 89. And they abandoned. The winner was awarded a large bronze cowboy boot.
Which looked like something that was like hanging out in Dusty Rhodes' house or Terry Funk's yard sale. And they're like, hey, this looks like a trophy.
Right.
They brought it over.
It's probably in Dick Murdoch's house and Dusty stole it.
Yeah, and I'm sure like all those guys like pissed in it and God knows what else inside of that boot and made it a trophy, along with the big $500,000 check.
Exactly. $500,000 was the prize. Okay.
Yeah.
So
this is a short card. It was only 2 hours and four matches.
Well, let me just do the format real quick before I get into the card. The format was slightly different in 86. Rather than have all the champions meet in the final match, it was decided that whoever won the most matches during the tour would be declared the winner. For example, Dusty Rhodes and Big Bubba, you know him better as the Big Boss Man, Ray Traylor, ended up in a tie after the final match in San Francisco.
He got a bicycle.
Itself marred the fact that the two last wrestlers in the ring were the Road Warriors, but tossed the coin, and the loser jumped over the rope. A two-man steel cage match. Hold on a minute. I have a lot of fucking papers here this week, Mega Palace. Steel cage match where one wrestler had to throw another one out of the cage between the two determined the overall winner. Over Jim Cornette's protest that Big Bubba should have been declared the winner because while Rhodes had won many of the matches, Bubba won more money because most of the matches had a $25,000 prize. Rogers won the $100,000 in Atlanta. So only one of the earlier Bunkhouse Stampedes, which was on December of 85, was broadcast on NWA television. But it was cut off after a few minutes of action. The 88 championship, which we're going to get into, the third installment was held on pay-per-view in Long Island, New York, January 24th, 1988, Uniondale, Long Island, the Nassau County Veterans Memorial Coliseum, the former home of the New York Islanders and the New York Nets. Okay.
NWA made it to New York.
Right, and they were trying to sell this pay-per-view, and they only drew 6,000 people.
Yeah, which...
Now
it seems like it's like a typical NWA WCW crowd, especially for that time.
Right.
But one thing I'll throw out there was, this is 1988 that this pay-per-view came out. And if you watch it on the network or whatever means you can find it, it looks like something that was filmed in like 85.
Yeah. Well, that was the production value. Yeah, it was the production value.
Yeah.
It's
like one of those, like the audience is completely dark with the exception of like the multicolored lights. Well, you know, I'll give NWA WCW some credit because like when they started getting things together, like they were the only promotion that was like having fireworks like during matches and stuff like that. So they were trying, you know, but at this point in time, they were still getting their shit together. So
yeah, the draw was 6,000. The max capacity at the Coliseum is 15,000. So that gives you a hint of where they were politically at that time. This was a WWF territory at the time.
Yeah.
So
WWF ran house shows there regularly.
All the time. But and the NWA didn't come up this far. They came as far as Jersey, but they ran mostly they came up as far as Philly for the most part. Philly, Baltimore, and then obviously down south.
And I wouldn't be surprised if those shows were kind of, you know, half filled too. But, you know.
It is what it is.
Not at TNA level, so.
Well, you know what, though? And to be fair to TNA, I mean, 600 compared to 15,000, that's like, you know, that's a big deal. You know, if you're not. Yeah, it is what it is, and I don't want to make that comparison because it's a different time, different era.
Yeah.
You can't really make that comparison, and I don't want to really shit on TNA when I still pay for a product. So
I just want to jab it in there a little bit.
Anyway, so let's look at the card. Obviously, there was a dark match. I did my homework. Sting and Jimmy Garvin teamed up to beat the Sheepherders by disqualification.
I would have loved to have seen that match on the
pay-per-view. Me too. This is when the Bushwhackers were not the Bushwhackers. They were the crazy fucking Sheep Herders, and they were killing people.
When they actually like were bleeding like crazy and biting people for real. And
right.
All that. And that though I am a bit disappointed by the DQ finish because, you know, as we'll go on, there's kind of like a, you know, no really conclusive finishes for half of the pay-per-view.
Well,
but it would have been nice to have just seen that match as a part of the show.
Well, there's a thing, too. A lot of times, they had the big DQ with the big cards in the NWA and the house shows with WWF so they can prolong the feud.
Yeah.
You know, there was no more of, I'm going to fight you twice on TV, then I'm going to fight at a pay-per-view.
They
actually built fucking feuds.
Yeah, and when you had your build-ups for things like the blow-off usually was worth the wait.
Yeah. Now in the pre-show, I played. This was right before this happened. Lex Luger had turned face and had left the Four Horsemen
after he lost the U.S. Championship.
And it all culminated to the Stampede, where all four guys. It was JJ, Luger, Tully, and Arn in the ring. And they were all in agreement that if they were the last guys in the ring, they were all going to leave and let JJ win his big match. They were going to give the spotlight to JJ for the night. But obviously, Lex wasn't having it and tossed JJ over, and he won one of the Bunkhouse Stampedes, and that pretty much set the tone. And then right before that, Luger blew him off in an interview saying, "Don't come to my matches anymore. I can do it on my own." And that started the whole heel, the face turn for Lex Luger. Okay. And then Dusty with Nikita, and he got involved with the Midnight Express. So that was a feud right there. So you had things going on. There was a lot of stuff. There was a lot of stuff to absorb. That's why I took an extra half hour today. And obviously the Road Warriors with Hawk fighting Ric Flair and the famous rape promo. I played that. So,
And Nick Slacks Luger.
Right. If you didn't hear it on here, it'll be available on the download, so it's pretty cool. All right. So your first match of the evening, the NWA World Television Championship champion Nikita Koloff for Beautiful Blobby, as Dave would say.
The Russian Nightmare versus Beautiful Blobby.
Again, my favorite looking
belt. The guy looked like a big marshmallow with a mullet.
My favorite looking belt of all time. You know this.
The U.S. Tag Team Championship.
No, not the U.S. Tag Team Championship.
Oh, my bad. The Television Championship.
Yeah, man. The Dave Milliken Special.
Yeah.
I
got to say, you know, the Television Championship was the best version of that. You know, Hogan had his version of it. I think the National Championship had the same design, but it was the Television Championship that looked
right.
best.
So this was a nice opening match. No matter how bad Beautiful Bobby looks, he can work his...
He's a workhorse.
Yeah, and, you know, Nikita Koloff, not really one of my favorites, but he was okay at the time. I mean, he was okay. He wasn't...
He was, he was a bit sloppy, but the man, you know, he lived...
Right.
And he was over. And it didn't matter if the dude was sloppy or not. Like, when he hit that Russian sickle, it was over. Fans loved him so much that, you know, the guy was a heel, and they switched him face, and it was just natural.
Right, and...
The promos were off the chain, and, you know, he's just one of those guys who, you know, he didn't have to be great. He was just a fucking force to reckon with, and believable in every sense of the word. and, even with that fake accent of his.
And I think with certain guys like Luger, Nikita was good with certain guys. Like, he was good with Bobby Eaton. He was good with Flair. He was good with Dusty. So, okay.
And this was a
good match.
Yeah, this was a – it wasn't the greatest match, but, you know, like I mentioned, I watched this – I watched the event twice. And it makes sense. You know, Beautiful Blobby is a technical wrestler. He's not a strong man. It's, you know, the high flyer versus the brawler. And it's just one of those matches where, you know, these guys got to strut their stuff. And Eaton's working a lot of rest holds, but he's also working a lot of strikes. And it's when I was watching this, I was really paying attention a lot to how they were working the match. You know, a lot of times when I watch this stuff, like, it's like, I don't want to think about things. I just want to fucking watch wrestling. But this one in particular, I had my laser-esque focus when I was watching this. And because I wanted, like, how the fuck is Beautiful Blobby going to get one over on the Russian Nightmare? And it's a television title match, which were typically the more technical matches. So there was a lot more wrestling in this. So I was thinking, you know, how are they going to have a wrestling match with Nikita Koloff? And how is Beautiful Blobby going to strut his stuff during this? And it was fantastic.
You know, again, I thought Beautiful Bobby's singles run was almost as good as his tag team run.
He was great at both.
Yeah. This went to a 20-minute time limit draw. Most of those television title matches did.
Because it was basically, typically it was because they would go to a draw either because both guys were so good or the heel would draw it out.
Right.
To kind of, mask his lack of performance. So, you know, fans would get hot on that.
Right.
And typical television time limit, you know, action heats up last 4 minutes in the match. And Nikita hits the Russian sickle with, like, literally 4 seconds left to go. And ref counts to two. Ding, ding, ding. Time limit draw.
And that's how most of the decent draw matches went or title matches went when they went to a draw, because that near pinfall, like Dave just mentioned, that's how it was in the NWA back in the day. So it, kind of exciting, too.
And it also pissed off a lot of fans. And I'll say this for myself, because you knew that they were going to draw it out until, like, the last couple minutes, whether you knew it was fake or not, you know, as a kid. And I would get so pissed that they would just, like, do shit like, what did Nikita did, like, the 10 punch, having the fans count. Like, and it's like, you got 30 seconds. Why are you wasting your time doing that? So
just, those are breather spots. You know, guys need to take a breather, or, you know, guys want to get their spots off, and you know how it is.
Yeah.
You know how it is. And it was also wasting time for a draw. All right, your next match was the UWF Western Heritage States Championship. Now, at this time, the UWF was bleeding money. Bill Watts couldn't do it no more, so they kind of merged into the NWA, and Crockett's
bought out.
He bought them out, but they absorbed guys like Sting and Eddie Gilbert and Rick Steiner and Larry Zbyszko and... So Larry Zbyszko is your champion with Baby Doll. This is one of Baby Doll's last runs, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Perfect 10.
Yeah. And, so I'm sorry, Barry Windham was the champion. I'm sorry. Larry Zbyszko was the challenger.
This was, the story was Zbyszko had not won a world, any championship in, 14 years.
Right.
So he was hell-bent on getting a championship.
So here he comes back into the territory. And, of course, Larry Zbyszko cutting his teeth in the WWF as Bruno's protege. Also in, I think he wrestled out west in San Francisco for the NWA. And he also wrestled, obviously, he was former AWA champion as well.
Yeah, but that wasn't until 89.
89, that was Larry Land. It was good promos with Larry Land. I love those.
Yeah, and, Larry Zbyszko is just one of those dudes, and, you know, for my time briefly, you know, working in professional wrestling, lots of new guys, they adore Larry Zbysko. He is the fucking man. And, you know, I never really looked too deeply into Zbysko's body of work, but...
Well, you will now, my friend.
I've been, you know, especially since doing this show, you know, I've been more keen to his body of work. I've been very focused on Paige's body of work lately. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But, you know, the guy's got something to him. You know, I always wondered how come, like, the fans are always chanting Larry during Nitro. But, you know, granted, the guy was never huge in the sport, but he has something to him, and it's the way that he works. And this match is proof of it, because he played his character like, you know, I feel so understated by saying this. It was so perfect because he played off the frustrated chump who couldn't win a belt to save his life, no matter how good or bad he was. Played off that, you know, he couldn't get it together in the match, cheated like crazy, and just did whatever he could to finally get a championship, and he did.
Well, I'm kind of glad that you agree that he's a decent worker, because I agree too that I get mixed feedback when I speak of Larry Zbysko. Some guys don't like him, like some guys hate him. Then it was some guys like really dug his stuff. So
yeah,
I think
it also has something to do with his personality too, because just the characters that he's played over the years. Typically, you know, he's always played that guy that's come up short, and the way that he would, you know, display his character kind of, you know, came off whiny and bitchy over the years. Unlike WCW, where he was the living legend and he was treated like a legend. But, you know, all his heel runs were very kind of, he came off rather annoying. So maybe, you know, too, with fans, like, you know, just taking the character a little too seriously.
I think his AWA stuff is very underrated. That's just me.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right. So he fights for the title against Barry Windham, who we love. Barry Windham's one of the best workers in the business.
He's one of the best. He has another beautiful blobby-esque physique, but.
He's also 6'6". He can get away with it.
Yeah, superplexing people.
Match was great. Yeah. Match goes almost 20 minutes, and Larry wins the title.
Yeah, from the there's a ref bump.
Yep,
I think there's like two. Well, the next match has a ref bump. Same ref, Dick Kroll, one of the great.
Great Dick Kroll
from the New York area.
Right. So your winner is Larry Zbysko. The title was very short lived. There's only two people that had it.
Well, which is strange. Like, I remember, I don't know if it was here or where, but somebody threw out the question, like, what the fuck does Western Heritage States mean? Or, you know, I don't know.
It was probably a regional belt that Bill Watts just absorbed from his territory and fucking. Yeah. We have to get the hookup on that. We have to look up the history.
We'll have to figure out what the hell Western Heritage means, Sam.
All right, speaking of ref bumps, my favorite match of the night. The NWA World Heavyweight Championship is being defended. The Nature Boy Ric Flair defending against the Road Warrior Hawk.
And I was really looking forward to this match. It's you know, it's not the best by any stretch of the means, because, you know, Hawk's a tag team wrestler. He's a power wrestler, very limited in the ring. But with Ric Flair at the helm, like, I always look forward to matches like this, because you knew Flair was going to be awesome. But it was like, how the hell is he going to defeat Hawk? Because he's a fucking road warrior. He does whatever the hell he wants. Steam rolls over everybody. You never see this guy get pinned or submit. You know, Flair at this time, what was he like? Five championships?
Five times. He had just got the belt back from Ronnie Garvin.
Yeah.
Now, you say that, and... I have the answer why. It's because Flair, knowing how monster big Road Warrior Hawk was in stature and in character, knew enough to put him over but not win the title,
yeah,
and make it believable to the fact like, oh my god, I just got by, and I didn't lose. You know, like Flair had the uncanny ability to do stuff like that.
Yeah,
a lot of guys can't do that as champions and get away with it anymore.
And you know, again, we talk about this week in, week out with the whole selling part of the business. That's kind of like going away in a sense. And Flair is selling this like he's fucking dying in the ring. He's like, Jesus Christ. And the JR and Bob Caudle are like, you know, like, oh, he's having trouble in there.
Right, of course, because he's fucking 6'3 and 300 pounds.
And he gorilla presses Flair 3 times in this match.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a, you know, how much was Flair weighing at this point? He had to be like 250 or something like that.
245, if that.
Yeah.
And this guy, Hawk's 6'3", almost 300 pounds, 21-inch arms. He's a fucking beast. And, you know, to Hawk's credit, he was one of the best big men in the business.
Yeah.
You know, and played his part.
Him to win the world championship then, I wasn't, you know, I know there's guys like, what was it? Bully Ray said on Jericho's show not too long ago, he was like, I'd never pay a ticket for Hawk versus Flair because you knew Hawk wasn't going to win. It's like, it didn't matter. You're for a lot of fans, like the belief was totally suspended for that night. And it's just kind of like, well,
we're fucking Bully Ray. If I was 12, he had to be fucking 15.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So like, what do you think? What, as a 15-year-old, you couldn't believe that Hawk could win the title? I believed it, but as a 35 or a 40-year-old, or in his case, a 45-year-old, of course not. I wouldn't pay a ticket. I you know, these guys are like, a lot of these guys, when they go on these shows, they're fucking bipolar anyway. So
yeah, they're jaded. They've been through so much in their life. But you know, for speaking for me, you know, even if I knew what the outcome was going to be, I would still love to see it just because of, you know, who Hawk is and who Flair is.
It was okay. It wasn't terrible.
You know, it's kind of like going to see like a Bruiser Brody match in Japan. You knew the guy was going to get counted out or DQ'd, but you just wanted to see the mayhem that was going to go on in that ring, you know?
So this went almost 22 minutes, and Hawk wins by DQ, like Dave mentioned, with the ref bump. And again, it was just Ric Flair being Ric Flair. You know what I'm saying? It was like a thing where, you know, he's gets to go to another town and defend that belt like he always did. Now, we mentioned Dusty Rhodes won every Bunkhouse Stampede. There's only 4 of them.
There was
Dusty booking at the time, mind you. Kind of biased when I talk about Dusty because I love Dusty. But this particular cage match was good. They, you know, if anything, they saved the best Bunkhouse for last.
Yeah.
Dusty Rhodes defeats Arn Anderson, The Barbarian, Tully Blanchard, Ivan Koloff, Lex Luger, Road Warrior Animal, and The Warlord. Now, this was stacked.
And it wasn't just stacked, but these are like legit badasses in a cage. A fucking cage match battle royal means only way out is either through the door or over the top of the cage, and that counts as an elimination. Like, and you know, when I first saw this as a kid, I was like, "Oh, this is going to be amazing," because you know, guys are going to get thrown over the top of the cage, and there's no mats on the concrete, so it's like a long way down. It's like a 15-foot drop. Like, what the hell's going to happen during this?
Right, and
you want to see the tube tops and the spaghetti straps, you know, fucking muscle tees that these dudes are going to wear with their Zubaz and their fanny packs and cowboy boots,
jeans, cut shirts,
belts.
Thank God Dusty never wore a fucking cut shirt, but
yeah.
But Dave talks about badasses. Ivan Koloff, Arn Anderson, and The Barbarian alone. You get them in a bar in real life, allegedly, from what I'm hearing. Those guys were legit badasses.
Yeah.
So, again, this was just a lot of fucking... This is just a big fist fight.
Yeah, and more or less. You know, there wasn't any... you know, there for me, at least, there weren't any real spots to really pull out other than fucking Dusty Rhodes bleeding like fucking crazy from his face. And I never understood why the guy, like, bleeding his right arm or left arm, whichever, that was bleeding like crazy. The only real like interesting spots were just kind of like there was a point where there was like, what was it? Blanchard and Anderson are fight or they're trying to drag out Luger.
Yeah, their main purpose of this was to put out Luger for all the stuff that happened right before this happened. So, and the Warlord and Barbarian, you know, they were Paul Jones's guys.
Warlord wearing his lifeguard tank top in there.
Yeah, I wouldn't fuck with those
guys.
This
is like a wrestling fashion show right before our eyes.
Well, it was 1988 Mega Powers, so I mean, it is what it is. This match almost goes a half an hour.
Yeah.
Dusty wins.
Because there was a good long point where nobody was getting eliminated. And another interesting fact about this was the heels outweighed the faces.
Right.
There was five heels and there was only three faces in this match. So the faces were outnumbered from the get go.
Right.
And it was typically like 2-on-1.
Yep. Yep. So I mean it's contrast the styles, but in the end, Dusty booking prevails. Dusty wins the Bunkhouse Stampede, wins the big Dick Murdoch boot with the money.
And how cool was that where, Dusty Rhodes eliminates the Warlord, a Barbarian rather, from the top of the cage?
I'm more happy that this happened in my backyard.
Were you at the show?
No, I was not at the show.
Did you know about it?
I didn't know about it until it happened.
Because you were going, you said, what did you say?
I was going to the Garden.
Three shows at the Garden?
I missed, I was going to the Garden from 85 to like 89 almost every month.
I'm surprised that you didn't catch wind of this, but you know, that time it was, you know, it's not like now where you can have emails alerting you to like, oh, there's a big match happening here.
And again, you have to realize I didn't get cable till 2 years later.
Yeah.
So I didn't have, I mean, it happened and the magazines and when they advertised the videotape, I was pissed.
Yeah.
I did manage to see it on video, which is cool. And it's pretty, I mean, interesting. So, I mean, I was more happy it was in my backyard. And I know I'm a huge Dusty Rhodes mark, so I don't care. Dusty put himself over. Dusty Rhodes was the brain trust to a lot of the good and the bad between the NWA and WCW. So I mean, I'll give the credit where it's due. Again, this was really one of the worst cards ever in NWA history.
And it wasn't that bad.
It wasn't.
Well, you know, there's definitely some like bad ones, but when I think of those, I'm mainly thinking about when they became WCW.
All right, so out of a 10, what do you mark it?
I'd give it at the very least a 6.
Yeah, I was giving it a 6 or a 7 too.
Just because you know, half of the card featured DQ finishes or time limit draws, and the other half had some conclusive victories. But for me, the main draw of the show was the Bunkhouse Stampede Battle Royal Cage match, just because it was such a I'll say this, you know, for all the crazy dumb shit that you see in NWA and WCW, it wasn't too far-fetched, and it made sense. It was brutal as hell, had some really, like, badass guys in a cage dressing their best, and, you know, I had this horrible image in my head. Forgive me, Lord, for even thinking this. But Dusty Rhodes reminded me of like some sort of pregnant animal. And I don't know if anybody's ever seen, like, you know, when people dress up like animals and shit like that, especially female dogs with like the bikini, like covering up all the nipples. It just seemed like that with Dusty, especially with all that gross shit on him. But thankfully he had a nice big old tank top covering up that disgusting body of his. yellow mustard colored one too.
I can't say anything bad about Dusty. I'm sorry. I try. I mean, I know he's made some terrible decisions in booking.
And he was in a Mellow Yellow commercial too.
Don't even get me started. I love that Mellow Yellow. I have that yellow. I'm gonna pull it out and I have to look for it. But it's
gonna open up that 20 year old can of Mellow Yellow and just.
I love him so much that I think that if I try, I don't care. I don't care how he looks. He was just one of the best performers ever in the ring. And I.
That reminds me. A friend, Eric, had a request of you for his birthday.
Oh, what was that?
He wanted you to say a line.
A line from what?
From Dusty.
Do you know which one it was? I'll
find it. Keep talking while I look for it.
So, I can't. I know Dusty made some, like I mentioned before, Dusty made some terrible decisions in booking, but I can't. I can't shit on his work. I think he was a Picasso in the ring, man. 300 pounds plus, wrestled almost an hour a night sometimes for consecutive years straight. Was a great tag team wrestler before he was a singles wrestler. 3-time heavyweight champion. I can't shit on him. I can't. He's one of the greatest, and I adored him as a kid.
Okay, I found the line. I'm not going to say it, but I'm gonna message it to you so you can.
All right,
we'll see it.
Do it in the Skype so I can read it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So, because I know Casey Kasem. I know Casey Kasem's on his deathbed, but he made a.
Yeah, wasn't he like kidnapped or something?
Yeah, but he made an appearance on the show today.
Just for Eric.
David Crockett, let me ask you a question. Have you ever seen a dipstick, baby? Have you ever seen a dipstick at the end of a lightning bolt? There you go. There you go there, Mr. Eric Martin. Happy birthday,
Eric. I haven't forgotten.
All right. I think that's going to do it for us tonight. We have a great show lined up next week.
Yeah, we got a guest.
Yeah. Kit Bauman, I think his name is.
Kit Bauman, the co-author of Lou Thesz's autobiography, Hooker.
Yep.
So we're going to be talking about that book. It's my favorite wrestling book. It feels got it.
Yep.
So we'll get his opinions on it next week.
Yep.
And we're going to have Kit calling in via Skype.
He'll be calling in, and we'll probably just, I guess, well, TNA has that. We have 3 pay-per-views in the month of June consecutively. We have a Slammiversary this Sunday. You can join the Rant at 7 p.m. for their pre-show coverage. We have Ring of Honor next week. On live on pay-per-view, and then right after that, at the end of June, we have fucking Money in the Bank. So it's going to be a nice, long month of wrestling pay-per-views.
And Sundays, people are going to be happy.
Right, and
hopefully.
If you're a dad, have a great Father's Day this weekend. If you are a dad, enjoy your day. If you're not, then if you're a mom being a dad and you're listening, so thank you very much.
If you've been pretending to be a dad for all these years.
Right.
You know, and, we're going to wish you a happy Father's Day anyway.
Yeah, and have a, you know, and we'll be, you know, we'll keep everybody. And with the Bunkhouse Stampede, I think if you can find it online or look on the network, Dave and I'll get a copy of it. We'll probably post on
Yeah,
on the
well, I'm sure there's got to be something on Daily Motion or something. Even if it's just the cage match or something, we'll post it.
Right. So, again, thanks, everybody, for tuning in tonight. And let's do some.
I love you.
Yeah. Let's do some plugs, play some music. And that's pretty much it now. Where's my music here? Hold on a minute there, Dave. There we go.
It's a song from the other Hot Rod.
Right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. We are on the Shining Wizards Network, The Rant, facebook.com/Turnbuckle Throwbacks. On Twitter at TBuckleTBacks. Email TurnbuckleThrowbacks1@gmail.com. Shout out to all the shows, man. Our Brothers in Arms, The Shining Wizards, The Midnight Jury, Neckbreaker Podcast, 2.5 Wrestlers, Apex Wrestling Entertainment, Wolfman Jack Foley, Just Incredible's Pro Wrestling 101. We got The Rant, The Wrestling Colon Show, What Are You Reading? Don Tony and Kevin Castle, Wrestling Soup, The Bloke Show, Mega Powers Radio, NXT Cast, Metal Thunder Radio, Tattoos and Touchdowns with Will Sweeney and Chris Espo, Uncle Eddie and the Ham Radio guys, our buddy Justin with the Inconclusive Breakdown podcast. Also, we have the Nerdport. JP Mayer's got a podcast. I forgot the name of it already. JP, I'm sorry. Message me with it. And I think that's it. Dave, anything else before we go?
I'm going to channel the spirit Buff Bagwell and call you all a bunch of fags.
That's great. That's great. And also, we have T-shirts, guys. T-shirts. Facebook.com/TurnbuckleThrowbacks. I'm sorry. ProWrestlingTees.com/TurnbuckleThrowbacks. I'm fucking tired as hell.
It's almost 11, so.
Yeah, the Rangers are winning, thank God. I'm going to go finish watching that game. All right, so, for the Mega Powers, as always, your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, bidding you all adieu. Same bad time, same bad channel next week. Avoid the clap. Be kind to animals. And don't get arrested.
I love you.
I love you too, Mega Powers. Have a great night, guys.
handle, no expression on my face.